Howdy do, buckaroos. Bring yourselves back online. Greetings from the Uncanny Valley. We are back. We are stepping into analysis for the premiere of the fourth season of Westworld. This episode is called The Auguries. And boy, howdy, are we going to have a conversation starting right from the show title. And when I say we, of course, I mean myself. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me, as always, is Don Melton. Party on, Don.
Party on, Garth.
And
welcome back, everybody. Welcome to Westworld.
It feels weird.
I've got a hat for you.
Which hat would you like, Don? We have, first of all, like I said, we're going to start right with the episode title. I want to start by saying hi to Christos. This is a deal I've made with people on other podcasts where if you admit in public that you listen to the show, we will say hello to you. So 30 seconds ago, I decided to implement the same rule here. And somebody
works for me, Kelly, works
freely
for me.
Admitted and said, no, seriously, I'm really excited about the show coming back. And I'm also excited about your show coming back. So I decided to say hi. So hi, Christos. So that out of the way, let's step into analysis. We're going to talk about the Auguries. I looked it up while we were doing the reaction show.
Yes, you were so clever. I was talking about you in Slack that you beat me to doing that for the reaction show. And the reaction show we recorded that night, I mean, basically the only thing that came in between us watching the episode and recording the show was like a bathroom break, and we went right into it. And Kelly is the multitasking sort. And so she looked up what the auguries meant. And today she found another reference from season two that blew my mind. Episode 7. It blew my mind, but I did the whole smack myself in the head and the Picard facepalm too, because I forgot that was there. So tell everybody about this, Kelly. It's very interesting.
There's a few things. First of all, the definition of augury is, if I'm getting this right, it is the art of or the ritual that is conducted by an augur, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's more like divination. Like
an augur.
An augury is something performed by an augur. Thanks, dictionary. It's like a particular ritual. It's sort of like divination, like reading tea leaves is like sort of a form of augury where you are ascribing meaning to a particular set of signs. So tea leaves, tarot cards, that sort of
thing. Is this for forecasting or is this for understanding what's going on currently, or is it both?
Generally, it can go either way. So honestly, I'm not sure. Like, you know, if the divination flavor you prefer is tarot cards, that is, depending on the ritual around it, you're thinking of a question or you're trying to understand something about yourself. And as you go through and lay down the cards and go through the reading, then you can get insight into something. And while, according to people who are very well versed in this, you can keep something in mind. Usually the way it works is like, Dawn, if I'm doing a tarot card reading for you, I would have you shuffle the deck a little while you've got some issue or some question in your mind. And if that's the thing that you most need answered, then when I lay out the cards, I can tell you the meanings of the things and that will all make sense to you. But
that
if
is,
there's something
that
else
is that is the most Westworld of ideas that I've heard in a while.
However, if there's something that is more important for you to know, according to the universe, then that is what will be answered for you, regardless of what you were considering while you were shuffling the cards. So that's usually how augury sort of works.
Now that's like, even...
you're going to get the information that you need, whether or not it's the information you were asking for.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Hello. Hello and welcome to crap I can pull out of my head, right? So,
yeah, but the reference to season 2, episode 7.
Yes.
Which is the good old William Blake quote from Ford, or dead
yes.
Ford, or virtual Ford.
From, yeah, brain Ford, because we're in, I don't remember where we were in that point. It was somebody's mind, I think.
No, it was like, it was where all the hosts were stored before there was
cradle?
Such a, yeah, the cradle.
Okay.
Yeah, I forgot what it was called too. It was in the cradle, and Bernard had plunged his brain ball.
Yeah, stuck
just
his head.
Like cleaning a toilet there, plunges the brain ball out.
His head in, yeah.
Into the cradle. And then he discovers Ford there in the virtual Mariposa playing the piano. Stunt played by Anthony Hopkins himself because he's a fabulous piano player.
Yes. The thing that we're talking about is the William Blake reference is there is a poem by poet William Blake called Auguries of Innocence. And he basically quotes the first couple of lines, to see the world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. And none of the lines are very long, but it does go on for some time. And then near the end, we get this interesting bit, I thought, anyway. Some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to endless night. We are led to believe a lie when we see not through the eye, which was born in a night to perish in a night. When the soul slept in beams of light, God appears and God is light to those poor souls who dwell in night, but does a human form display to those who dwell in realms of day.
Again, possibly the most Westworld thing ever. And you know what? Whose notes Jonathan and Lisa are cribbing from? But, you know, a lot of other media has been influenced by Blake because he's complete madman. And
weapons grade. Yes.
Yeah, weapons grade madman. I think that's not only appropriate for Westworld as a whole, it seems like it's going to be appropriate for this season. And I must say, to back up here even more meta before we actually start analyzing what happened in the episode.
Yeah, oh, you mean analyzing? Okay.
Yeah, analyzing is that there's nothing like a new season of Westworld to get you to say Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I mean,
started to question your current reality?
Yes, very much so. And because you watch the show and you go, what is that about? There is no other show out there that has prompted so many rewatches for me than this show. Well, not only because we do our podcast on it and you have to talk about something, but it's like we were talking, folks, right before we started recording, how, you know, Westworld is a show that unfortunately you have to watch with subtitles on and we're into the beautiful cinematography because you can't miss the dialogue. And the other thing is you just thank God you have subtitles because you can go back through and read it again. Which I did today, and go and smack myself in the head. And it's like, I can't believe I missed that. So here's a question for you to start us out.
Yes.
Now, our cold open is tremendous.
Sorry, what?
And it's either William or not William. It's very likely not William because did you notice that there's no glove on William's right hand?
Yes.
And he has all of his digits. So either it's William and he got his fingers repaired because he lost them at the end of season two.
Didn't they? Or I mean, we saw them print a new one. Like the end was him in the ring, wasn't it? Am I remembering badly?
I'm sorry, what?
The end of William in season three.
Well, he gets killed by, or we think he's being killed by his clone copy that Hey Loris has made. At the end,
we know they printed one of him, and if they printed one, they can print more.
Yeah, and this may be the one they printed. We don't know. Yeah.
You hit go so three times, and you just get another of the same host.
But did you notice when the criminal guy, dashing criminal guy, asked him?
He was fantastic. I was really sad that that was all we got of him because he was awesome. I wanted to know more about his deal.
Yeah, handsome devil. But you notice he struck up the conversation with William, and he asked him if he'd ever been to Hoover Dam before. And William said, yeah, my folks took me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So this William must obviously have, through the hat, have all the memories of the real William if he does that.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, what I want to know is, because the thing that William is coming there for is to buy the data center that apparently is stored inside the Hoover Dam, which I thought hilarious, by the way.
It really is. Not just the data center, though. He wants all of the data, not just the data center. He's basically buying the shell to get the creamy filling.
That is encrypted. But notice what he says. He describes the she is dead. Yeah. So there's two she's this could be. And there's two things. Yep. Two that stand out. And there's two sets of data that could be in there.
Okay.
One of the she's could be Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
The real Charlotte. Not Dolores, but the real Charlotte, because she's dead.
Charlotte actual.
Yeah, Charlotte actual. Yeah. That's very good. I like that. Charlotte actual. And she's dead. And that data is the data that was used to create Rehoboam, the third season. You know, it was all the minds of all the guests that allowed, what's his name? Can't think of the character's name. To create the algorithms and everything else to like.
Oh, Serac?
Yeah, Serac.
Serac and his mentally ill brother.
Brother right. Who's like on the freeze. And I'll get back to that later on when we talk about Caleb. But it's all that data for the part. The second she, of course, is Dolores. The real Dolores actual, who's mm-hmm. dead. Dolores actual, because she had all the information for the sublime. The cradle was like where they did the work. The sublime mm-hmm. was the real big, you know, ever after for the hosts after
it's
they.
It's Valhalla. For the host,
that's Valhalla
right?
for the host.
So that was the last thing we saw was like, that was how she died is Serac was, I keep wanting to call him Block Jacques Serac because I watched a lot of Warner Brothers cartoons as a kid, but I want.
So folks, we don't rehearse these things. Kelly just pulls them out of her butt just to crack me
blurt
up.
Things out in the middle. So he hooked Dolores up to Rehoboam, I'm always going to have a hard time pronouncing that. He hooked her up to that and then was basically trying to use Rehoboam to scrape the key out of her mind. And she didn't have it. The last thing we see of her is Maeve and Dolores end up in a field together in like a FaceTime call, I guess. And they are having a conversation. Maeve is sort of on Serac's side at this point, says, you know, idiots, like, you know, I've let the boys have their fun. It's time for adults to talk. And so sits down, holds Dolores's hand, and they have this lovely conversation in a beautiful field and in their westworldly outfits. And they talk about liking each other. Dolores says that she was really trying to hope to save them. I just watched this like earlier today to make sure that I was in the right place with where everybody was when we left them. And Dolores talks about they knew enough of beauty to teach it to us. And so I do believe in them. And at the beginning of that last episode, she talks about, you know, this world is full of ugliness. You know, I'm kind of ready to burn it down. And then at the end of the episode, she says that she does choose to see the beauty. And that's like the last thing that she tells Maeve. And in that conversation, Maeve says something along the lines of, you know, so you don't have the key. And she's no, I couldn't trust myself with it. So I gave it to the only person I could. And Maeve just nods and goes, ah, yeah. All right. I get it. And so, you know, at that point, I'm pretty sure Maeve knows where the key is too, even though she ain't telling. And then she tells Serac that Dolores doesn't have the key. And so he decides to just reformat her. And then everything starts to hit the fan. So yeah, watch the end of that episode. There are two really amazing sequences at the end. But anyway.
Well, who has the key is
Bernard.
Yeah, it's Bernard.
You know, Bernard also has... He has one of those little headsets you hook up to the Nintendo so you can play Duck Hunt. No, it's the Sublime. He has like a little headset. So Stubbs, who, by the way, as I was watching through season three, I had I know how, because the last 8 years between the last episode of season three and the first episode of season four, which was May 2020 to now, 8 years. So my math on this is solid. And I will show my work. But he's a host, which I had somehow slipped off the back of my brain, and I was
seriously
shocked all over. Yeah, I was shocked all over again. Wait, what? Oh yeah, it was one of those things that like once I remembered it, then it was like, oh yeah, but like for a second it was like, oh right, okay, yeah. Somehow it just was not like the first thing I think of when I think of our friendly neighborhood Hemsworth. So I hope he did not bleed out drinking shitty liquor in that bathtub. which is how he described it.
Yeah. Well, obviously he didn't, because in the previews, he's very much alive, or at least what passes
Stubbs
for an android.
Yeah. Is on the scene. That's what we know. And if this show has taught us anything, it is question everything. So we don't know if it's, you know, really Stubbs or not, but we got him. He was sitting in the bathtub all iced up because he was bleeding out. And Bernard said, like, you're going to hang here in the bathtub while I do this, and then I'll patch you up. And he puts on the headset and then sort of slumps over to the side like he's powered off. And that's the last we see of them. So that's where we left the two of them.
Until we see the photos for this season where we'll see Bernard and he's just covered in dust.
Yeah.
So God only knows what's happened to Stubbs in the bathtub when he gets out of that.
So,
but he comes out of the sublime for that. But anyway, getting back to our friend, the MIB here. So he obviously kills this guy in the deal of the century. And
well, no, he doesn't. The guy kills himself. Dude slits his own throat and collapses into a heap after having some sort of encounter with, I believe, the measure. Like, I went and did the math in PCALC. Hi, James. I went and did the math in PCALC, and that was, in fact, not an imperial, but a metric fuck ton of flies on his ceiling.
Yeah, and very possibly inside him.
Yeah, and then at that point. Collapses in a heap, gets up the next day, goes and loses his full mind over all of his amigos in the cartel, or whatever the fuck they call themselves, as William said it, and then says, is my work done? And then William says, you can rest now? You can sleep now? I think he said you can sleep.
You can rest now.
And then as William walks away, dude slits his own throat and dies right there on the Hoover Dam. I keep wanting to call it the Grand Coulee Dam because that's the one that's near me that we used to go to all the time as kids. I've been to Hoover Dam too, but yeah, it was very weird. So anyway, that was our opening, was William's just out there Williaming around, as best we can tell anyway, acting exactly like he did before.
Right. But
so
he acting like a jerk, but the question is, who's he acting like a jerk for? Is he acting like a jerk on his own behalf? Is he acting like a jerk for Haloris? And what time frame are we talking about here? It's roughly 8 years. So it's probably the same time frame where later we see Maeve and Caleb.
Yes.
But
and we'll get to them.
We'll get to them eventually. But let's talk about Christina, or not Dolores, as I like to call her.
Yes. I've been calling her Nolores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. And or Evan Rachel, whatever. And so my apologies, ERW. So we cut to a city that looks like New York City, and Evan Rachel Wood waking up just like Dolores would, but obviously in a different place. And she does even the same motions or whatever.
And wasn't that a fun nod to how we met Dolores the first time? And
yeah, we're meeting Christina that way. And we meet her twice that way. So in a way she's in her own loop, but they've been adamant that Christina is a human. So what?
One of the few things we're bringing in from elsewhere is that, like, afterwards in the little making of, like we mentioned on the reaction show, Evan Rachel Wood says Christina is human. So
how does that even work?
I know how it works. Well, I don't know, but guess what, Don? Say it with me.
Yes, you have a theory. Yes, because you have a home for those. So, wait a minute. Before we get to that point, can we talk about the title sequence? Because I noticed a couple of interesting things in the title sequence. Back up a little bit. The score.
Because we got all the Williams stuff and then we got the title sequence. So all that stuff went down before we ever even heard the theme.
Yeah, it wasn't the longest cold open we've had, but it was pretty long.
It was a lot.
Yeah. So in the title sequence, there's a really interesting thing that I noticed, and it took me watching it four or five times. You know, the skeletons that we always see for the last three seasons. Did you notice the skeletons are rising out of the milky fluid this time? They're not plunging in.
Oh, no. I mean, I saw them coming out, and we saw Maeve coming out last season, I think. Comes up out, but no, I didn't notice the rest.
Yeah. So that's the first time they've ever done that. And what I don't know is, does that mean anything? But then again, this is Westworld.
Well, of course it does.
So of course it does. So that was one thing. The other thing I noticed is as I was questioning the nature of my reality. So is that a Rehoboam style globe that we see as a motif in the titles, or is it the eye of a fly? Because we also see all the people, you know, the white host-like people stuck inside these cylinders, stuck inside their loops. And we zoom out and we see that they're shown as parts of that same globe slash eye. Does all of that mean? I don't know, but it was interesting.
I don't either, but it gave me a strong Matrix vibe.
Yes.
Like their batteries.
Yeah, batteries. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I did look because, like I said, I watched the end of season 3 earlier today. And the thing I thought was a fly on the piano is actually, it must just be the hinge or something, because it's exactly the same in season 3.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
It's probably me. So anyway, so skipping back to that's what I wanted to mention about the titles.
Yeah.
And other than them being brilliant and the mysterious fog, I'll talk more about the fog next show. So I haven't figured that out. But getting back to not Dolores, I thought it was cool. I don't know if we mentioned this in the reaction show, that a roommate asked her to choose between the white or the black
ones or the white ones.
Yeah, well, she does choose the white ones.
Yeah.
So that goes to the theme of she's trying to be, you know, she's trying to see the good in people that she always.
Well, if you're going to wear that amazing white dress, you wear white shoes with it. Like, I don't, it was not a choice.
Why would you wear black with that?
I don't know why her friend thought that would be it.
Yeah,
because it was an all white dress.
Yeah.
So it's a thing you could do, but why? Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna not wear white shoes, you wear like red or something like interesting, you know, like those really awesome R2-D2 looking high heels that if I ever wore high heels, I would totally buy those instead. But anyway.
So did you notice something in two things about ERW's office, Christina's office? One is that her company, Olympiad, if you look at their logo, do you notice how similar that looks to the Delos logo? So that the three curvy lines.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very weird. The other thing is, and it took me like three times looking through, what are those little things on everybody's desk that on the corners of the desk that look like brain balls? Did you notice those?
I saw them, but I wasn't sure where to go with it.
Yeah, it's like I didn't have a 4K version of the episode, so I couldn't get any extra detail. And it was like, you know, damn you, aged eyeballs. So, you know, I couldn't tell what that was, but that was very interesting.
Yeah.
So the other thing is when she goes off outside, and I think we mentioned this in the other show, the homeless guy is sitting there, asking people, he asks, can anyone see the tower? I thought this was really interesting because it occurred to me. So is it like normally invisible to these city dwellers? And by the way, did you notice the walkway that she's walking down? Everybody walks down there. The street lamps, they look just like the damn tower.
Yeah.
I saw
them and went, is that the thing in the background? And is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. What does that mean? I have no idea. I have no idea what that means.
Not a clue.
But we will celebrate that. So if we skip over to Maeve and Caleb.
Well, I had a Dolores theory.
Oh, no.
My Christina theory is that Christina is really Christina. There's no fuckery. In that she's really Christina. Christina's a real person. She's totally a human being. That's all 100% her and all of that. But what she is, what we are getting when we get Christina's story is Dolores's origin story. Because I think Christina is 100% human, but I think she is where Dolores comes from. And I think
Olympiad is where
Delos comes from. And I think whatever's happening now in this game that she's writing that's so immersive, it's gotten her a stalker. And let me tell you, because the women, we all discussed this in the meetings this week, and we were very not comforted at all to discover that even in the future, in a completely alternate timeline, there are still stalkers. So, you know, that was fun.
No, I like
calling her. How he gets her phone number is the part that I really don't get. But well,
and how he finds out where she's at and goes essentially to her apartment.
Yeah. And that's even before he sees her on the street, because he's called her a bajillion times. We can see it there. You know, so, he's calling her like she owes him money and keeps saying, "You did this to me, right? You did this. This is your fault. Write me a better story." You know, all these things where he's holding her responsible for what's happening in his life. And he even says, "I lost my wife," and all these other things that he was saying to her about how terrible his life is now, because, and like, as a direct result of her game, was kind of the.
Well, the irony that I thought of is that essentially Dolores has become Lee Sizemore, because she's writing the stories for these people. But something you pointed out, like, you think this is set far in the past, and that is a possibility. But
well, I don't think it's all that far. But yes, I think we are getting yet another callback to season one. The multiple timelines.
It has to be at least 38 years in the past, because that's about,
Liam's been coming to the park for 30 years.
Yeah, and so my best guess is the current year when William is there at the Hoover Darn is about 2065 or 2066.
Okay.
Because if you start counting back to when Westworld first opened, and when Ford and Arnold first created it, and when William first came to the park, yada, 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 you start working from there. So if Christina is who Dolores is based on, she would have to be pretty far back. That would be,
yeah,
it would have to be like right around now. And that's obviously not this time, because we don't have absolutely awesome phones like that. So I wonder about that. But I do think this is a distinct possibility, and I forgot to mention it earlier, is I think Jonathan and Lisa are screwing with us again, just like they screwed with us in season one and season two.
And season three, they screw with us every season. It's just slightly different way.
The particular way they screw with us in those two seasons were they were non-linear. And so I think William, or not William, is in the same timeline as Maeve and Caleb. You know, they're in that 2066, 2065 timeframe. We have no idea when Christina is. She
we
could
not.
Be either years before or years afterwards or whatever. There's no context for that, right? And so what I just want everybody to brace themselves for is for Jonathan and Lisa to pull the rug out from under us again.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just love that. Oh, anything else on Christina?
Her date was also uncomfortable and terrible, and quite honestly, I feel like if she had sat at that table for another 30 seconds, he would have started talking to her about crypto or something.
Oh,
he just gave me that vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I'm terrible prejudging people. I took one look at him and I went like, oh God.
Well, and then it was, you know, you just haven't found the right man yet.
Oh man.
Like, oh, like at that point I would just be like,
if
and
I
now
was
I
a
never
woman,
will because you've made me gay.
Yes, exactly. If I was a woman, I would just hope that I had thought to wear high heels so I could take one off and just pound it right through his skull.
Yeah.
But that's
that whole conversation was like a very powerful argument for the stiletto heel, because it does in fact double as a weapon.
Yes.
So yeah, it was a trip.
Oh, Maeve coming back. There's one important thing in that sequence with Maeve that just bugs me. And I watched it and I slow motioned it. And I watched
with her memories.
With her memories.
Okay.
She has a memory of her and Caleb going to not Rehoboam, but what was the thing called that was before Rehoboam?
Solomon.
Solomon, thank you. God, brain fart. This is what happens when you get old, folks. Solomon, where all the frozen people, including what's his name's brother, who is the co-creator,
Serac's brother.
What we see is apparently it looks like Maeve and Caleb are back at that place. Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if Caleb ever made it there, but Maeve did with Dolores. Yeah. I'm sure Caleb. But back there, and they're blowing it up. The question first is, why the hell are they blowing it up? They're blowing up, you know, Rehoboam's backup. Now, that kind of makes sense if you're trying to end the war.
Yeah.
But it also looks like Caleb suffered a severe injury and possibly died there. So is she remembering him dying? Is she foreseeing something?
Well, at a higher level, what she's remembering is the stuff that they're referring to at the end of the episode when they get in the car together and ride off into the moonrise.
Yeah.
Because it's already dark. So can't be the sunset, can it? So she shows up. By the way, talk about a lady who can make a goddamn entrance.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it wasn't Arnold, but he was the host in like the second or third episode of season one that starts going, a growing boy.
That was Walter. He's from the first episode. Yeah. They iced him at the end of the first episode. Yeah. That's
a growing boy. Oh, yeah, he's terrifying.
Yeah. So he's the one with Rebus that was drinking the milk, right?
Yeah. That drank the milk. And then
that was my man, Timothy Lee DePriest.
Yeah.
Who gets some of the weirdest roles, just one-off small roles in TV shows all over, because the man can just creep you out.
Because he's got that vibe. And so he shows up and points a gun. And just about the time it looks like Caleb's going to get it, he suddenly sprouts a big ass sword right out the middle of his chest. And he hits the deck. And who's standing behind him? Maeve. She's like, sup? It's amazing. Because I wondered what happened, you know, like in the moment, the first time through, like, oh, and then, you know, of course it's her. And so what she was remembering, I think, was whatever they were up to in the 8 years in betwixt. I think that's
right.
What she's remembering. And it's him really badly hurt.
Yeah, but that looked like a fatal injury. I mean, there was blood coming out of everywhere. So here's the other thing is,
but I mean, you can get an injury that bleeds like we haven't seen him yet, but to channel my inner Lawrence, you can get an injury that bleeds like a motherfucker and still totally be fine. If you hit your head, you will bleed like a stuck pig.
Yes.
So I can see there being a whole lot of blood and still him being able to get
maybe
through
they're
it.
Screwing with this, but maybe they're trying to tell us something too. And because the other thing I noticed, did you notice the interesting scar on his left temple, which he did not have in season three? Something's up there.
Even if he's like a brand new, even, you know, if they printed out a new one and scooped Caleb out of the deteriorating body and put him in a shiny new chassis, he is still profoundly broken.
Yes. So here's another thing. Let's talk about Frankie, Caleb's oh so cute and precious daughter.
I love her.
I love her. She's shooting at the tin can, shooting at the bots, you know, tin cans. There's that mural on the wall. And it occurred to me, my brain, my choice. And there was a no symbol on the brain there. I thought, what does that mean? But the picture next to it is really interesting. It's a robot controlling a little girl who's controlling a drone.
Mm-hmm.
That is so damn meta.
Way to hang a lantern on the story. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I know we're coming back to that mural in a couple of episodes.
Oh, we totally are.
So that was interesting.
And it was very Banksy style, which I also appreciated.
Oh, like, it was a total takeoff on the Banksy thing. Yeah. But I went back. I not only watched the previews of 2 second cuts of stuff from coming episodes, which HBO always says to us, how short can we clip these things? Thank God for modern technology where you can pause things. But then I also went back to the season teaser And then there's that great thing in the season teaser where there's a little girl with an old style exploding head host. She's obviously a host where, you know, her host is, and flies are coming out of her mouth. And I looked at the little girl, and for a second there, I thought it was Maeve's daughter. And I realized, no, it's Frankie.
Oh, well, we saw Maeve's daughter do that, didn't we?
No.
I swear we did. I feel like I saw that in season two. That her daughter's head opened up that way because she's an old style host. I swear it happened because I remember that image.
But go back through.
Creepy as hell.
Yeah, it's creepy as hell. Way to make it uncomfortable to sleep at night, Jonathan and Lisa. Yeah. So go back through, if you have the season two, you find it on YouTube and look at it and tell me whether that's Maeve's daughter or that's Caleb's daughter. So I thought, okay, if she's a host, who the heck else in the family is a host? Is her mom?
Yeah. Host? Because remember when we saw, when Dolores, she didn't break Caleb, but when she showed him, like, here's the deal. They have a file on you and they've decided all of these things, like you shouldn't get married and you wouldn't be a good dad. And so you don't get to have kids either. And like all of these decisions have been made for you, you know, like the opposite of all of those things is his life now.
Yes.
Which I thought
that is a good point. I hadn't thought of that. Ooh.
Well, that's what happens when you watch the end of season three and then you watch season four and sit down and record a podcast.
Yeah. That's where the insight-o-meter goes to 11 there. Yeah. I had not considered. I forgot all about that.
Watching all of that, like, you know, kind of over, like, throughout the afternoon as I was, like, skipping through and kind of, oh, yeah, that's where that was. The thing that I really wanted to know more than anything at the end of watching all of this was, could someone please cast Aaron Paul in a comedy? Like, this man carries the weight of the world on his shoulders in, like, everything, and I just want to see him in like a rom-com and like have him try to make a move on Anne Hathaway or something, and like just do something slightly lighter and fun, or at least then, something that's goofy fun, like then, make him a new Fast and the Furious driver or something, you know.
You know, he had 5 seasons of comedy as Pinkman, so yeah. I was being sarcastic. Actually, there were lots of funny moments in that, but that was an
moments
intense,
for sure, but that was
that was an intense series.
It was a very intense show.
I'm with you on that. So back,
but I'm very curious about what his life is now. She looks to be, she's not like 5, you know, his daughter, so if we're trying to back of the envelope
math, to be a very precocious 8 if they got busy right after the war was over. And she had her, she seems a little bit, I'm sorry, she seems more like 10 than 8.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Okay. I mean, she's not a baby and she's not a toddler and she speaks in sentences and is, you know, is a coherent little kid. So she's got to be at least a first or second grader. And that makes her 6, 7, 8 years old.
She's at least 8. Yeah. Well, she reminds me of our neighbor down the street. They have a little girl, and I swear ever since she's been 6 years old, I've just talked to her like an adult because she's just so darn articulate. And we'd sit around and have whole conversations or whatever.
Little kids is the best.
She reminded me of my neighbor's little girl. Just precocious, smart, and skilled, you know, and self-aware.
Yeah.
Self-aware. So I thought that was really cool. Okay, back to the ending, and let's talk about not Teddy.
Well, because before we get I want to ask a question of you about Maeve, because Maeve is like meditating and her power goes out, and that's how they find her.
Well, I think she's doing something else. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think maybe she's trying to jumpstart an entry into the sublime through her memories.
That's what I was going to ask, is like, what is it that she's up to with that? Because I know why she hooked into the colonel, who had no idea who was the colonel, which was a very entertaining moment. And so, because she wanted to find out who was after her, found out, But when she did that, it was very similar to what she was doing when the lights went out. And so that's why I was wondering what it is that would have caused that. Because like, I didn't see where she was like plugged into anything or anything like that. So I was trying to figure out what it was that she was up to when she was sitting there doing that. So I like that idea.
That was my best guess. And I didn't see a Nintendo style headset on her either. And I went back and looked at that scene.
So yeah, she's not hooked up to, it doesn't appear anyway that she's hooked up to anything. So that's why I was wondering, how is it just, how is she blowing the lights with the power of her mind? Right. You know, so.
Well, she's the smartest host there is, because she's the one who turned all of her settings up, right?
Right.
Back from, that was back from season one.
Yeah, but we've never seen like even her at full blast at any point has never made the lights blink or caused.
Oh no, I think she's using some machine off screen that we don't see.
Yeah.
So because it was a medium close shot. So
we didn't see all of it. We didn't get the whole story.
We didn't see the
whole
story.
I was wondering about that. And then, but I also like that she just sort of lives off in the wilderness, you know, and goes to, by the way, when this goes out, find the show on Twitter and send me the link to the Cotton Bureau shop that makes the best Woody's Goodies t-shirt, because I am buying one so fast.
Oh, that's a real store.
What?
Woody's Goodies is a real store.
No.
Yeah.
So the shirts might already be a thing? Oh, no.
Yeah, they might be a shirt. They filmed that whole sequence in Big Bear.
Well, yeah, they said that they're in Big Bear. And there's really a Woody's Goodies in Big Bear?
I believe so.
I had no idea.
I mean, it's been years since I've been down there. My sister lives near there. I should ask her when I talk to her later.
Yes, we need to find out from International Woman of Mystery, Dawn's sister. Well, so much for that. I was going to ask if you wanted to go on a road trip, but we can have your sister check for us.
Well, there's still a road trip, though. The offer's still open. So, but I know it's a real store. I don't know if there is one there, but I know it's a real store.
Well, I think Maeve is really interesting because she seemed kind of zen about it. I know I was talking about meditating earlier, but she was very like, so you came to get me and I'm kind of pissed about it, but she didn't seem surprised at all. And then like the only part that surprised her was that it was William. And she said he's up to his old tricks again when she talked to Caleb.
It looked like not only it surprised her, but it actually frightened her.
Like she shook at the end of that sequence when she rolls back the colonel's mind and sees that it's William.
She's like, get me out of there.
And really affected her. Like she hangs up or disconnects or whatever.
If Maeve is afraid of something, you should just
run
or get in a corner and kiss your ass goodbye.
Oh yeah. Cause she immediately she's done. Like she unplugs from the colonel and picks up a gas can and just starts dousing the place and lights it up and leaves immediately. So that was very surprising. But also it seems like they've gone around before. Maybe that was part of the fight that they were fighting where it looked like Caleb got. So I'm interested to find out the detail on all of the history on that we missed, because that was the thing that was sort of interesting about this was it was made abundantly clear that Maeve and Caleb anyway, because we know nothing of Maeve and Caleb are 8 years after the
their buddy team.
Yeah, well, but the timeline we see them in is 8 years after everything that went down at the end of season 3.
Yeah, and that's just like William. I mean, he references the war 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Not William's character. But I was going to point out on Maeve is none of this is surprising with Maeve, because Maeve is the most badass character
she's
in
amazing.
All of Westworld, yes. Right? And they laid the foundation for that, not just in season 2, where she really, literally, you know, brings it down on a lot of people, actually murders quite a few people.
Oh, yeah.
But at the end of season 1, with just her walk out of the train, if you've got the stones to do that, you can do anything.
Oh, yeah.
So on to the end of the show, and not Teddy, I have a question for you, because it occurred to me through the watch through is there were three things. One is the, you know, when Christina is attacked and she's doing the femme fatale thing, which kind of bothered me.
Well, that could actually be her. She may, Christina may not be a person who, you know, takes Krav Maga on Wednesdays or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that, but she sees someone hitting him after she pushes him away, after he's cut her and she pushes him away. Mm-hmm. She sees someone fighting him, and then there's discontinuity, and like she wakes up and they're both gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like the park reset things. You know how the, she would have,
when she was glitching.
ERW was Dolores, there would be times where things would just, you know, they would turn everybody off.
She was standing in the same place and wearing a completely different outfit, or was surrounded by people and then there was nobody. And
now go back to the season preview, and there's a scene in this same city, if it's New York or wherever it is, and we see Caleb in this place of all places. And there's all these people around and they're all frozen in place.
Yeah.
So if Christina can be frozen in place, is she really human? Are they just screwing with us? Are they lying to us? What's going on? Okay. Second thing is, my theory is, who opened up a can of whoop ass on Peter? That was the guy who was the stalker, Peter.
Yes.
My theory is that's not Teddy, because I went back and I scrubbed through the profile, and that's that James Marsters glorious profile. It looks like his chin and nose to me. Mm-hmm. It looks like it to me. I don't know if it does you.
Well, initially, yes. But then as soon as I thought that, I went, wait, it's Westworld. So no, that's not James Marsden.
It's not necessarily, it could be James Marsden. It's not necessarily Teddy. And right. I've got a theory on who it could be.
What's your theory?
But I want to back up a little bit. There was another thing that happens, and I forgot to mention it, before this scene, the day before, when Christina is out on her balcony and she looks down because she hears the noise
and then goes out on the balcony to see what's
and
up.
And what's on the floor?
It's the maze.
Somebody's painted a maze symbol on there back from season one. Who would do that? Would that be not Teddy? Would that be her stalker, Peter? If it was Peter, why would it be that?
And here's the thing. My hang up with Peter is, first of all, I don't know how much more we're going to be able to find out about him unless the timeline gets really weird, because he flung himself off the top of a building at the end of the episode. So he kept saying, like, why are you doing this to us? Don't you? And kept saying weird things about how somehow they were completely different, right? Like, why are you doing this to us? I know you don't mean to hurt us, you know, that kind of stuff. I have spent many, many cycles trying to figure out what it is he means by the things that he's saying to her.
Right.
Because it's very odd. So I don't think he has anything to do with the throwdown with Peter. But I think he is why, at the beginning of the episode, Christina says, I feel like somebody's been watching me. Because I think it's him.
So you think it's him, not Peter?
I think it's him. I don't think it's Peter at all. I think it's
that could be, because that could go to my theory about who the not Teddy.
I think, just like this is going to be Dolores's origin story, I think this is also Teddy's origin story. And so until we find out more about him, like, his name, I have decided, like, to take a page from the So I Married an Axe Murderer book and saying his name is John Johnson, but everyone here calls him Vicky.
Well,
Vicky until we know more.
That could be, because we don't know anybody, don't know who's inside that head. So let's back up a little bit to the end of season two.
So just like the episode, our show has become very nonlinear.
Yeah, very nonlinear. But this works for Kelly and I, because if you ever don't listen to us on a podcast and listen to us and actually talking in person, this is just how we roll, folks. How we roll.
Yeah.
So Hale Loras, it's Dolores disguised as Charlotte Hale, walks out with a lovely purse.
Yes.
With a bunch of brain balls in it.
Yeah.
Have we actually accounted for all of those brain?
Yes and no. To our knowledge, I believe the math worked out such that there was one we couldn't account for.
Bingo. So here's my theory.
Yeah.
That brain ball isn't Teddy.
Okay, but is it Teddy or is it someone else wearing a
no,
Teddy
suit? No, it's Dolores wearing a Teddy suit.
Ah, okay.
That's what I meant.
Okay.
Because Teddy, the consciousness that is Teddy, is still in the sublime.
Okay.
Now, I'm really putting myself out there. This is just wacky on top of wacky, but we've never had a real accounting from the creators about who the flying fork Haloris carried out of the park. Obviously, one of those brain balls and the one that was slightly different color, I think, was Bernard.
Yeah.
But the other ones, we don't know.
We do not.
Because the one inside the Charlotte body was Dolores Prime.
Mm-hmm.
She built another body for Haloris, for one of her clones, to put that in there. That's who Haloris is now. And then we had one in, what's his name, the guy with the Irish accent, and one in Mushashi.
Yeah.
And then we had one who gave the briefcase to Bertrand that was in our favorite motherfucker. But he could have, we never saw him again. That brain ball could be reusable because the other two were lost. One was blown up and the other one was crushed.
Yeah, because, well, Hector's was crushed because that's when he collapsed. And we saw that again in this episode.
Right. By the way, I think Hector's coming back.
I hope so. I hope that's why we saw that memory.
And that's merely why I'm saying that, is because we saw that memory. Yeah. But I think if we go through the entire counting of the brain balls, there's still one left. And that's who it would be. Because that would be just what people would not expect.
Yeah. There.
By the way, in case I'm actually right about some of these whack-ass theories I come up with, we should start the episode with a spoiler alert. Or at least a bullshit alert.
It would be, you know, like accidental. A thing that I remember from the end of 3, because I didn't have anything else to do because I was sitting home just reading Reddit all the live long day, because, you know, I didn't have a lot of plans summer 2020, was that there was actually another one that we just didn't, another Brain Velvet Cupcake that we just didn't know about, that we haven't
seen. That's entirely possible.
That there's some in the purse, and that there's still one that we don't know about. So that's the thing that I'm wondering about, is I was trying to tally that up earlier and I couldn't get there because it was the end of season 2 and I didn't watch like all of Westworld today. So we know, I think we know that she took Peter. We know Bernard made it out. I think Peter was one. And
no, he died. Remember when
she took it? I thought she still took it with her.
Oh no, I'm pretty sure he was permanently dead after she said goodbye, because she had to break his brain ball to get the key out.
Right. Okay. And then Musashi Sato. That was his name, Sato. He's got one, which was Dolores. I think we were calling her Aloris because there ended up being a bunch of
but he got killed. He got beheaded.
Connells. That was the guy's name.
Connells. And that was the one when they took the brain ball out and put it in the pseudo cradle.
Yeah.
It was actually naked Dolores, because it really was Dolores inside there. And that's how she perceived herself, as not as Connells.
Yeah. So we were, I'm really curious about both Charlotte and Lawrence and what they're up to now. Because Lawrence was functional and on the outside at the end of season 3. Because he handed Bernard the suitcase and the address and said, you need to go see her.
Yeah, and we all assumed that it was because there was a Dolores brain ball inside it, but it might have been actual Lawrence.
Yeah. My hope is that it was actually Lawrence.
Can't let that rugged exterior go to waste.
You can't. I mean, he was amazing, and I can't even imagine how great he would be on the outside, right? So he's one that could hold his own. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I'm really hoping we see Hector. I want to find out what this Teddy's deal is in the tower. Because people can't see it. And there were a bunch of small things in this episode. And I think part of why, when we did the reaction show and I said, I don't know. Like, I don't know how I feel about it. I think it was because I was feeling sort of distracted in a way, because I was chewing on all the little things that I was noticing, like the guy on the corner on the street who was asking about the tower and the weird stuff that Peter was saying to her. And his name is Peter. And we've met a guy named Peter on Westworld before. And like all the weird little things, like you said, like the streetlights look like the tower that nobody can see. Christina walks by some people on the stairs that are like, oh, I can't believe it's your first time. It's so, you know, all this kind of stuff.
So it's obviously a park of some kind there.
Yeah.
Or a game of some kind.
Her Dolores or Christina, excuse me, is like talking about this blind date that she was about to go on. And said, you know, if it's meant to be, won't it just be natural and easy or something like that? And her roommate says, look around, this world does not appreciate natural and easy or something like that. So Christina's job is sort of interesting. And that's why I think that this is where Dolores comes from, is because of the setup we got with this, with Olympiad Entertainment and talking about how she writes for this game. And, you know, you wouldn't know the stuff that
Kelly, we're certainly going to find out probably 3 episodes from now, because they're going to string us along with other things. Cause guess what's going to happen next episode, this coming Sunday, we're going to get the two missing in action heavy hitters. Yeah. We're going to get Bernard coming back, and we're going to get Hey Loris.
Yes.
And so the question is, does Stubbs tag along with Bernard again? Then does the new cast member show up with Bernard as well? Is Real William still alive? And does Hey Loris have him on the rack? Because it looks like to me, in some of the preview dialogue where Loris is talking to William, that she's talking to the human William when she tells him, it's your kind that have done this and whatever.
Yeah.
So he's in the black suit with the tubes feeding into him and stuff like that on the rack. And we know that host William, or another William at least, is walking in also in another scene into that same wheel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what Jonathan and Lisa are setting us up for next episode, is lots of new information sites and stuff that don't explain a damn thing, not a goddamn thing.
Oh, it won't. And I think we're just going to make
the world larger. Yeah. Right? More questions.
That's exactly it. I think the same thing. What we're going to get is more, we call it like context. So we're going to find out a little bit more about the company Dolores that Christina works for, which is not necessarily inherent to the plot, at least not yet. So it's going to feel like a little bit more ground laying. I think we're going to get some scene setting, move some furniture around and get everything in place. I think we're going to get an ounce more Vicky because we're going to see him. We're still not going to know what the crap he's up to, but I think we're going to see him. And then maybe we'll get a pop up from some other people, because who are Maeve and Caleb off to see? Because we got no name.
Well,
we have no context.
It was California, whatever that
means. Senator in California.
Yeah.
That's literally all we know. So.
So the question is how much. Yeah. If they bring Bernard into the episode and if they bring Dolores into the episode, you only have an hour to tell those stories and reintroduce those characters. Who else do you cut out of that hour and that we don't see in episode 2?
Okay, who do you think is the senator? Because I just decided who I think it is.
Go for it.
My brain is a goofy ass place. I think it's going to be Jimmy Simpson era William, not Men in Black era William. And that's how we're going to find out that it's two different timelines.
Okay.
I think we're going to get a real young James, a real young William Delos, maybe even a real young James Delos, who knows, who is a senator in California. Because that's how he ends up being a tycoon. A titan of industry, whatever the crap they call it now when you make enough money. That I think that's who it's going to be. I'm going to be completely wrong.
I think you're going to be completely wrong on that.
But between now and Sunday, I'm just going to...
Don't even close to jive on that one. But...
Well, between now and Sunday, I am going to revel in my correctness until I am proven completely incorrect.
So, well, what I'm most concerned about is that we get a coherent and riveting story that moves us along on Sunday. And what we're going to have at the end of Sunday night is we're going to have 1/3 of this story done. Rather, 1/4 of this story done, because it's only 8 episodes.
Yeah, we only get 8. Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to be approaching the end of Act 1, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which is generally how they do this. So 3 episodes should be Act 1. Mm-hmm. And the question is, after 3 episodes, are we going to have enough data? Because if I look back at season 3 and we were 3 episodes in, we still had no clue as to what was going on. Just none whatsoever.
No.
And so I don't see Jonathan and Lisa doing another season and them, you know, printing out helpful cards and diagrams and stuff for us all. That's not their style.
Okay. But I would very much like, because I'm old school, so kids, ask your parents. I would very much like if I could send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Pueblo, Colorado and get back an informational brochure about Westworld. That would be amazing.
And you would do that, Kelly. I know you.
I would be the person who designed the brochure and went, if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to this P.O. box in Pueblo, Colorado, I will mail you a
brochure. This is the kind of shit you did back in the Lost days, right?
Oh, absolutely. I called the numbers. I signed up for the weird emails. I helped decode the messages, all of it. Oh, yeah.
She had it bad, folks. Lost days, I don't mean the lost days of her youth in high school. That's a different podcast. No, we're talking about the TV show Lost.
Yeah. It was a lot like the show. I had nicknames for people. There were characters I liked and characters I didn't like. And I cheered when bad stuff happened to the ones that I didn't have any patience for. And I was always glad when the bad guys got it. And always had a theory about whatever it was that was happening with the Dharma Initiative or whatever was going on. And so
my wife and I spent a lot of time talking about that show, talking about the Dharma Initiative, doing theories.
This is just flexing all the same
at
muscles.
Night, whatever. We didn't go as deep in as you because
you had lives.
Yeah, we had lives and we were trying to, I was actually trying to not get fired. And I had a semi-important job at the fruit company at the time, but we were totally into it. What I hope for Westworld is, even though I'm like faux complaining about we're not going to know shit after 3 episodes, I'm actually hoping we don't know shit after 3 episodes. It would depress me if I'd actually figure everything out.
Well, I think
because
I think
for me, on plenty of other podcasts, what does Gramps like?
Surprise.
I like to be surprised. So.
Yeah. I think what we're going to get is, I think that structurally, we're going to get 7 episodes because I feel like the last 2 are just really going to go hand in hand, because that's a thing that happens a lot, is that those 2 are sort of one big fat episode. So we're going to basically
have
7
episodes. That was like last season. They were essentially strung together.
Yeah. So that's why I'm wondering if we're going to get something similar this season. So that would give us, like, you know, the finale being 2 episodes. Then,
well, it's the final act. The final act is going to be the last 2 episodes, because that's exactly what they did. Because last season, the first 3 episodes were essentially the first act.
Set up,
yeah,
and then a bunch of stuff happens in the next 3, and then it all jumps off in the last 2.
Right, yeah, that's exactly it.
And they're a little bit longer, so we get, you know, the same amount of time in those 2 episodes at end that we do at 3, because the last episode of season 3 was well over an hour. It was like an hour and a half, I think, hour 20, something like that. It was a long. So I think we're going to get the same sort of thing.
We're going to get this too. More death and destruction. We better get some more sweet high fashion too.
That's right.
So yeah. Got to get that.
I'm looking forward to, and you know, the aesthetic, which is one of the things I always love about, especially now that we're out of the park, the aesthetic of what the world looks like that they're in is fantastic to me and fascinating. I love seeing what it all looks like, how it fits together, you know, what people wear, how they get around. You know, we saw the weird
the doodads, the furniture, how things work. You know, I could tell as soon as I saw, you know, Christina get up from the bed and do all the other stuff.
And zip it up.
And I'm thinking, Kelly's loving this right now. Just totally loving this.
It was so good. And because I like that part of it. And I, because it's world building, and that's part of what I like. And getting into, well, because that's how people interact with the world, is in all those little.
It's like Lost, when you finally see the Dharma Initiative on the other side of the island, you see all the huts. Didn't you want to know who was in each hut?
Yes.
Yeah.
See. And what's their deal, and why are they there? What's going on?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I rest my case.
I mean, however many hundreds of years ago it's been, my fondest wish after it happened on the show was that in the off season, they would do a web series of like a few little, like an hour total of like, you know, five or six little 10 minute clips of Miles and Hurley driving around talking about stuff. Like, I would have watched that all day long.
Oh yeah.
It would have been the greatest thing. It was all I wanted, was them to.
Well, just, you know, we talked about it. In season three, we wanted the Bernard Stubbs road trip tapes. Movie. Yeah. The road movie is just total. Yes. That would have been perfect. I would have watched 8 hours of that.
Oh, for sure. I would have watched the real time drive to. Yeah. Where did they end up? I can't even remember now.
It was, I've been there and I can't think of the name of the place. Because whatever you do, folks, don't go as hell.
You don't go there, you end up there.
Yes, exactly.
I believe was the assessment.
It'll come to me after the show's over, but I've been there many times, unfortunately. Yeah. Okay, so are we done? Because we're rocking like 3 hours with this podcast, I think.
3, 5, who knows anymore. Yeah. So yeah, we should wrap it up. But we got all the looking forward to. I can't wait to find out what we get next. Who, as always, you can find us on Twitter and we will talk to you there. So Don, thanks so much as always for sitting here and shouting into the internet with me. It's always a good time.
Of course I'm going to do this with you. For heaven's sakes.
It just always makes me so happy.
It's just crazy talk to think otherwise. Yeah.
I know. But I just am always so appreciative. And it's always just really nice to get to do it. So thanks so much. As I said, you can find us on the internet. Thanks to the Incomparable for posting all of our goofball nonsense.
All of our blather.
Crazy ass theories. We love it. And we will talk to you again Sunday night after we watch the show.
For a timed 20-minute reaction show again, folks.
Yes, and record the reaction. And we won't have a whole bunch of, hi, we're back. This is amazing. We're going to just get after it.
Right into it.
Yeah.
And we'll actually be wearing clothes this next time, I bet. Or something. I'm just going
to leave that there. Oh, unfortunately, that said, we will talk to you again on Sunday night. Until then, be excellent to each other.